Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's always encouraging when you're coming up to speak and the person doing the opening prayer mentions your subject in the opening prayer, because I want to talk about singing today, but perhaps an aspect of it that you might not have thought. Mr. Bowles wrote in the pastor's report this week, our thinking must become the same as our elder brothers. And this is one thing that Christ really wants. Now, if you just turn first of all to John 17, John chapter 17, and verse 11. And again, we read this quite regularly every year, don't we? It says, now I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world, and I come to you, Holy Father, keep through your name, through your authority, those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are. And just to emphasize it, he mentions it again down in verse 21, and he mentions it again in verse 22. But I'm not going to read those verses because I'm only allowed to use three scriptures, and that would use up my whole supply. This is what Christ wants more than anything else. He wants us to be one, because we've got to ultimately end up thinking exactly as he does. If you recall in Revelation 3, it talks about, God says on the first fruits he'll put his Christ's new name, the name of Jerusalem, the name of the Father. In other words, when we go out anywhere in whatever there is after the new heavens and the new earth, we will go for the Father. And we're not going to get that opportunity unless we're on the same wavelength, totally, with Christ and the Father. Now, it's rather interesting because this article appeared in the newspapers just about 10 days ago. It says, choir singers not only harmonize their voices, they also synchronize their heartbeats, a study suggests. Researchers in Sweden monitored the heart rates of singers as they performed a variety of choral works. They found that as the members sang in unison, their pulses began to speed up and slow down at the same rate. Writing in the journal Frontiers in Neuroscience, the scientists believe that synchronicity occurs because the singers coordinate their breathing. If you think about it, when we're singing hymns, they're in lines, and at the end of the line, you've got to take a breath, unless you're still young and fit. So most of you will take a breath. And in breathing, this then gets the bodies all into a certain unison. And this Dr. Bjorn Wyckoff from, I'm not even going to try and pronounce where he comes from, but it's in Gothenburg University in Sweden. The pulse goes down when you exhale, and when you inhale, it goes up. So that when you are singing on the air which you are exhaling, so the heart rate would go down. So it actually affects our heart rate. So he says, if this is so, the heart rate would follow the structure of the song or the phrases, and this is what we measured, and this is what we confirmed. So in other words, as we're singing the different lines, we all start to breathe at the same points. So after you've sung one or two hymns, you are physically in unison, which is rather interesting. Now there's another headline right on the heels of this one, a day later, saying music releases a mood-enhancing chemical in the brain. Now, we sing three hymns at the start of the service. And it didn't happen by accident, because that's what Jesus Christ wants, because in singing three hymns, it puts us all in a positive frame of mind. And people in a positive frame of mind find it much easier to take in what's then coming afterwards. It says that the study, also reported in the same magazine, found that the chemical was released at the moment of peak enjoyment. It says researchers from McGill University in Montreal said it was the first time that the chemical called dopamine had been tested in response to music. Music psychologist Dr. Vicky Williamson from Goldsmiths College, University of London, welcomed the paper. She said the research didn't answer why music is so important to humans, but proved that it was. Isn't that interesting? The paper shows that music is inextricably linked with our deepest reward system. A key element of the study was to measure the release of dopamine when the participants were feeling their highest emotional response to the music. To achieve this, researchers marked when participants felt a shiver down the spine of the sort that many people feel in response to their favorite piece of music. This chill pinpointed when the volunteers were feeling maximum pleasure. So they established that singing, therefore, sets a positive mood within the whole group. And I felt this, you felt it. If we've sung, particularly if we sing the 23rd Psalm to Crimond, and you get to the last verse and everybody's singing the parts, it's just like a choir. And you do, there's a certain feeling, even if you can't sing very well. Andy's nodding his head. But there is a certain thing. I directed a choir at the feast in Durban, and we had a choir of around about 90 adults on a huge stage in a massive hall where you could stand on the stage and talk to the people on the third tier without a microphone. The acoustics were so brilliant. And when you do the Hallelujah chorus there, and at the end you cut it off, and the sound is still like coming behind you in the hall, you do literally feel the hair standing on its end. It's just such a, I don't know, it's such a tremendous high. And you can even, especially when you turn to the congregation to start with and get them to stand. And everybody then is participating in this one piece of music. It's quite awesome. Now, singing was very important to King David. Let's just turn back to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 23, verse 5. Moreover, this is when David was setting up. God did not allow him to build the temple, but he sure went ahead and did most of the planning. Not only the buildings, but the people who were going to be taking part in the services. Moreover, 4,000 were porters, and 4,000 praised the Eternal with instruments which I made, said David, to praise therewith. Now, when it says instruments, these people evidently played instruments and sang at the same time. So he had a choir of 4,000 people. So any of you children who get told off for playing the music too loud, just remember, Mum and Dad, that Solomon had a choir of 4,000, and that was heard for miles and miles and miles around the countryside. Might get me into trouble. Now, later on, if you turn to 2 Chronicles, or as one of my children used to call it, 1 Chronicles and the other Chronicles. 29, verse 30. This is when Hezekiah was getting things back on track. Moreover, Hezekiah the king and the princes commanded the Levites to sing praises unto the Eternal. And what were they supposed to be singing? They were singing the words of David and the words of Asaph the seer. And they sang praises with gladness, and they bowed their heads and they worshipped. Singing has always been an intrinsic part of the services in the temple of God. It's the singers were classed in the same class as the Levites, and they were provided for by the temple. Now, Mr. Bowles, again, I said, wrote in the pastor's report, our thinking must become the same as our elder brothers, right? Now then, we read in Acts 13:22, and you can just make a note of this. It says, he, Christ, raised up unto them David to be their king, to whom also he gave this testimony. This is Christ. Christ gave this testimony about David. He said, quote, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, which shall fulfill all my will. David wrote dozens and dozens of psalms. We've just sang two. We'll have some special music, which is another one. We'll sing another one later on. These are words that were written 3,000 years ago, and we're still singing them today. David loved singing. He wrote the Psalms. He had this massive choir, which obviously would have continued on. Can you imagine what would have happened when the temple was dedicated? He said the sound went throughout the land. You could hear this for miles. Now, in Matthew 26, verse 30, we read this every year at the Passover. One of the last things that Christ did
with his disciples before he went to be arrested and murdered was they sang a hymn. You see, Christ also likes singing. And when eventually the first fruits and all the people who are being resurrected in the first resurrection, when they come together, they're going to sing the song of Moses. And they're going to be playing on harps. Now, obviously, Mr. Bowles mentioned the other day that seems to be something that somewhere in all this, when we changed into spirit, that somehow we take on a lot of the knowledge that Christ has. We simply have to, because he lives on such a different plane to us that we just could not comprehend what's going on. So that will obviously include the ability to play a harp, so we can all relax. But can you imagine the sound? Singing is rejoicing, but singing creates unity. It creates unity mentally, because we're all singing the words that King David wrote. It creates it physically, because our bodies literally are all working in unison when we are actually singing, which I think is rather remarkable. And of course, we're all together spiritually, because we're singing praises to our God.